Thanks very much, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here. It's a Friday edition of the Wintrust Business Lunch, and we'll be talking here in the Allstate Showcase studio, but a lot going on in the newsroom and elsewhere. Ryan Burrow watching that. He's watching Wall Street. Looks like we're, maybe going to get 20,000 by this day, January 6, 2017. Orion is on that as well. We will check in with him in a couple of minutes. So we'll talk to also Brad Meltzer, I told you, from, well, he's a novelist. He's got a series of books now out for kids, which are of interest to me. He's a history guy. He's a longtime friend, so can't wait to catch up with Brad. Right now in the studio, Andrea Haines is here, the editor for Blue Sky Innovation. You read that in the Chicago Tribune. Andrea, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Happy New Year.
I guess we've been talking, but we haven't just sort of laid eyes on each other in a while.
I know. We've all been working remotely, enjoying the holidays here and there and everywhere.
Okay, let's jump in. I want to start with this. We've talked about before this Eric Lakofsky move, Tempus it's called, right? Where he wants to gather all kinds of data with cancer patients and sort of create this sort of, what, mega database that might change the way people are treated. He made another big step this past week.
That's true. So Tempus, which is from the Groupon co-founder, Eric Lefkofsky, who's a Chicago billionaire. He's also been in logistics and other things. He has a new sort of cancer-fighting tech startup called Tempus, and they announced this week a partnership with the Mayo Clinic. So they'll be participating in some studies there.
And so the idea is they're getting more and more of these big institutions, right? They got a couple in Chicago.
They are. They've signed up a number of institutions, and they're partnering, you know, in this case, on studies where, you know, they're really trying to build kind of a massive library that will help doctors figure out how to better treat patients. They're calling it kind of an operating system for oncologists,
and,
is what they hope to build.
And they're hiring, too. So if you are a computational biologist,
they're ready for you.
Do you know any computational biologists?
I don't think so.
I'm sure they're out there. But it's, I think there are about 100 people or so working for the company. They're in River North, and they're out to change the world. So good luck with them.
Yep.
You wrote a piece as well, or several of your writers wrote pieces, looking ahead to 2017, what the trends are going to be. I want to ask you about natural language. Which one really struck me? Oh, the encryption one. This new messaging app called Signal, which apparently has the endorsement of... is it Julian Assange who signs off on there,
or
Edward
yep.
Snowden
yep.
who uses it? And so we're going to follow Edward Snowden along, or what's this about?
Well, it's funny. He was tweeting about it back in 2015 and just kind of saying that, you know, he trusted it, which I guess maybe says something to someone. but fast forward a year later to the fall of 2016, when you have, you know, all this hacking talk, you have Donald Trump and perhaps whatever people fear that government may bring. And suddenly it seems like Signal is on many more people's lips than it might normally be. And I just think as that, you know, these kind of issues grow, more and more of sort of the common people among us are thinking more and more about these.
So the
things.
Idea is that this is a fully encrypted messaging. So it's like Messenger on Facebook, but it's much more private or secure.
Yeah, it's just an advanced sort of super encrypted way that you can communicate. And, you know, again, just something people think about more and more as some of these cases come out. And it's pretty interesting to think about who's watching us.
I guess that's true. It's just twisted to me that the use of this app by a guy who sort of eavesdrops on the U.S. is taking off because of the election of a new U.S. government.
Yeah.
That's all sort of upside down.
The fiction writers must be busy, but the fact writers are right. Maybe even busier right now.
Another thing. So yesterday, my wife was at Heinen's. We shop at Heinen's sometimes in the north suburbs, and she was going to get me a little chunk of chicken out of the buffet to eat. And she looks good, sesame chicken. She puts it in the tub. And then she says, oh, this is vegan. This isn't even chicken. And so she brought it home and ate it herself. I'm eating this stuff. I swear it was chicken. I mean, it had the texture, it had the look, it taste, everything about it. And I bring it up because one of the companies you say to watch in 2017 is this company that makes Beyond Meat, these sort of faux meat products are really coming into their own.
Yeah, and this one, interestingly, is from a couple of the founders of Twitter. And they're making a fake hamburger, which is apparently so like real hamburger that our vegan photo editor who tasted it and wrote about it was actually kind of disgusted by it because she thought it was so
really?
Much like meat.
It was an affront to her.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, but, you know, I feel like that's a great thing, right? Good news for animals. If we can figure out other ways to sort of hit that craving, get the protein we want, do all those kinds of things
well,
in non-animal form, maybe it helps people transition to eating a little less real meat.
Yeah, okay. I grew up in farm country. I don't mind
a real burger.
A real burger. That doesn't bother me at all. But what is interesting to me is that if you can produce these proteins to make them meat-like, the agricultural footprint is much smaller.
For sure.
When it comes to the crops rather than the herds. So Good news for farmers to just be farming something different.
Yep.
A little short today because of the breaking news, but thanks for coming
in. Understood. Thanks, Steve.
It's 12:23. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. And, let me just say that it's warm in the Allstate Showcase studio, and it's a little cruel to look out on the window. It's Tom Gimbel is here from the LaSalle Network. Tom, it is cold outside, right?
I'm thawing out a little bit, Steve.
You didn't make the walk down the river,
no,
did you?
No. We took the Uber.
All right, so Gimbel comes in to talk about, you place executives,
yep,
all of that.
All levels.
And so we had a big change today or this year in network executives, not executives, but high profile. Megyn Kelly bolted from Fox News and went to NBC. And you're saying that's something that other bosses, the rest of us, can look at and learn from.
I think we have to realize that, Megyn Kelly had been at Fox for 10 years. And that's a long time. And they were the number one ratings get on cable. And she chose to leave. And whether it was for the legal issues and the sexual harassment cases that existed that were so highly publicized last year, or it was for the opportunity to host her own talk show, which,
right,
I think was the primary driver,
right?
A daytime show. Anybody can leave at any time.
One of your suggestions that I like, though, is the idea that, so she'd been there 10 years. She was a big part of that network.
Yep.
The bosses should have been re-interviewing her.
Yeah,
re-recruiting. Absolutely. Tell me what that means.
So it's taking as much time on the great people that you have existing on your team to keep them as you do on to get the new
people. To bring
people.
New ones in.
Yeah, I mean, it's that sports dilemma, right? Why does Jason Hayward get brought in for $25 million a year, but Chris Bryant's making $600,000? We all know that exists, that for the new flavor of the month, you got to go pay money. But it doesn't mean that you shouldn't give a lot of love and attention and let people know that you actually care about them.
And there's something to learn there from the employee standpoint as well, to know what you want and to let your bosses know what you want, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's in front of the time of the year we're going through these reviews, and I'm like, I hate doing this stuff,
right?
Please don't ask me these questions.
Yeah, I think too often that people are doing it for the wrong reason, that it's an expectation we've got to check the box, instead of saying,
right,
the goal of doing it is to make sure that the employee knows how valued they are to the organization, right? And that the employee wants to know that where they can improve to be more valuable next year. And it doesn't have to be high. The listener's saying $20 million. Who cares where you work for $20 million, right? But whether it's $200,000 or $20,000, you need to be valued, and there needs to be clear expectations of where you succeeded and where you failed.
That's a little bit of it, because when it comes to Megyn Kelly, money, I would assume, probably wasn't as much the issue. The fact that she went to NBC and they didn't say, "Here's what we can do for you." They said, "What would you like to do?"
I think that's really the important when you're wooing somebody. But there's ripple effects from that in any hiring situation. What are the other people, personalities at NBC News going to feel like now? How much money is she making? She got her own show and she's never even been here before. What about me when I waited 10 years to get my own show? So are those people now going to leave there and go to CBS or go? And what if the ratings aren't good? Then you have we got to remember, in that industry, Diane Sawyer left CBS to go to ABC, and then she ended up getting thrown on Good Morning America and being up at 3 in the morning.
Right, right.
If ratings go down, everything changes.
And so let's talk then about, we were talking off the air about Chuck Todd,
yep,
who hosts Meet the Press, and people are saying, wow, maybe he should be concerned. Now, Megan Fox is going to host a nighttime Sunday show, so maybe not the Sunday morning, but what do you do if you go to Chuck Todd and say, "Hey, you're going to be okay, we value you," or how do you
exactly
reassure those
right
people?
I think you've got to go and approach everybody that may be whispers, and there is, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Right.
And you've got to say, "Hey, we want to talk about the fact that we're bringing somebody new in," because the more she feels acclimated joining it, it's a culture play. It's a culture play, and you've got to make sure that everybody makes her feel welcome, so then she'll be better.
Tom Gimbel is the CEO of the LaSalle Network. LaSalleNetwork.com,
you
right?
Got it.
What else you got going on that we should be aware of?
We're doing a lot with corporations and helping them evolve their cultures. We've got a ton of recruiting. Contrary to the post-election hangover, jobs are at the forefront. And we're seeing, the job reports came out today,
yeah,
156,000 jobs added. So it's still a really good market for people to get a job.
Good to see you. We'll talk again next week.
Look forward to it.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. I'm just trying to do my job out here. I'm just trying to do my job. I'm just It's 12:38. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Are you just trying to do your job? More and more of us are. And, well, the jobless report was out today. To talk about that, we're joined by Mark Hamrick, a senior economist and analyst, I should say, at Bankrate.com. Now, Mark, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve. Happy New Year, belatedly.
Thanks. Same to you. When we were putting together the shows for this week, I said, I want Mark on at the moment the Dow crosses the 20,000 mark. Now, we're 19 points away. No pressure, well, but let's see what you can do.
You're the ultimate market timer.
So the Dow, you know, I think Orion just said got to within a third of a point of 20,000. And how much of all of this is psychological and how much of it is just sort of coincidence with the day's news?
The market is rising because of great hopes for the incoming administration. There's reason to believe that the incoming president and the new Congress can agree to measures which will help the economy. But the other part is the economy has been doing pretty well on its own. But between the stock market and the reaction in the bond market, which has lifted interest rates, as well as measures of sentiment, whether it's from the Conference Board, consumer confidence, the home builders, home builder sentiment gauge, as well as one other from small business. People are definitely enthusiastic about the prospects for improvement. Now comes the big challenge when Donald Trump essentially owns the economy. The buck stops there, and then they need to deliver.
I got to tell you, I feel a little bit like, and this might be difficult to explain, but like I'm watching Jaws and I look over my monitor and see the shark getting closer and then it goes underwater, gets a little closer. It's, I think, about 16 points away now and on the way up. You wrote in your blog, though, that anything the next president does probably won't have real impacts on the economy for a year or so.
No, I think it's going to be quite some time before we see any real benefit from their intentions to reform taxes, to, let's say, spend more money on roads, bridges, and highways, which need that spending. And, of course, it seems as if the first order of business is actually quite disruptive, and that is to do away with the Affordable Care Act when we don't know what the replacement is going to be.
Tell me about that. And I know I want to talk to you about the jobless number, but what I hear people tell me over and over is that Wall Street and business likes certainty. He certainly is bringing in uncertainty, and yet the Dow and the stock market is reacting positively.
Well, it wouldn't be, terribly disconnected from what happened, in 2006, and I'm not trying to draw a parallel, but sometimes when you think things are certain, they actually are less certain than one hopes, mm-hmm. and I certainly hope that that's not the case right now, because one thing is absolutely certain, and that is we will be surprised by the developments of the next year, both on the, foreign policy front and the way even the economy proceeds. Hopefully, it'll be an upside surprise with the economy, but we just don't know.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the report out today. The jobless number, the jobs created 156,000, which was a little below expectations. The jobless rate ticked up from 4.6 to 4.7. That uptick actually is being seen as a positive sign.
More people entered the workforce, and that's a good thing, people feeling optimistic or perhaps in some cases desperate. But the good news is feeding along those sort of fine print aspects of the report was that average hourly wages or average hourly earnings were up 2.9% over the past year, and that's the best we've seen since 2009. So that gives us hope that in the coming months we'll see further salary gains and that more workers will enjoy, let's say, the fruits of the economic recovery.
And so tell me about because that was always the thing, right? They said that the recovery was coming along, but the workers weren't feeling it. And because of that, they didn't have so much confidence. Well, we've seen in the past few months that confidence is going up. Is that because their take, what they're bringing home, is also going up?
It's probably a combination of factors. I think there's just some optimism with the new president. And, of course, we know that the country remains bitterly politically divided. The approval ratings for Donald Trump will probably be remarkably low as he takes office. And that's his opportunity to perhaps surprise people to the upside with that. In terms of the economy, there's a part of it that is just the natural healing all these many years since the financial crisis and Great Recession. But we also have seen, obviously, the job market continuing to improve. More salary gains, and more aspects of the economy are, let's say, normalizing after a number of years where they were quite abnormal.
Tell me about the U6 rate, which also ticked down, I think, a bit. It's at 9.2. That's the bigger sort of basket and the one that they think more accurately reflects our mood when it comes to employment?
Well, it's certainly a broader gauge, and so as you say or indicate, the headline gatherer, the 4.7% is the so-called U3, whereas the U6 attempts to capture more aspects of potential stress in the workforce or workplace. And so that does include, for example, the people who are working part-time who would like to have full-time work, and then those who haven't been quite so aggressively seeking work but would like to work. So there are people who like to look at that U6 number, but whether you look at that, which is now 0.1% below the pre-recession peak, in other words, it's almost totally healed, or the other headline number, the point is they both come a long way from when Barack Obama entered office, and they are half the level of the peak. And so these are telling us that by many measures, the economy is not only improving and has improved, but we should view this as some sort of success in the sense of healing from that those horrible days.
We're talking to Mark Hamrick, senior economist and economic analyst at Bankrate.com. And when he came on the air, we were about, 23 points away from the 2,000 mark, 20,000 mark. Mark, we've got less than a minute together left, and we've got 7 points to go. So I think you're doing pretty well. We're at 19,992 now.
I take no credit or blame, I should say, Steve.
Take all the credit. Why not? Let's speak to that. People always say that presidents get too much credit and too much blame for the economy. We've had now 2 million jobs a year created since 2011. This is the last substantive report of Barack Obama's presidency. How much credit does he get for that?
I think that he deserves some credit. He's been a good steward, I think, of the economy. Among the things that he's done is appoint Janet Yellen as Fed chair. He certainly was aggressive in the rescue of the automobile industry, which has been unpopular in some quarters. And we will see in the coming 4 years whether the incoming president will lead us to a similarly improved place. I think we hope that that's the case, but obviously the jury will not be returning for quite some time on that.
You mentioned Janet Yellen, and with the wages going up, the argument for an increase in the rate hike maybe in March seems a little stronger.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting because at the last meeting of the Federal Open Market Committee, the members suggested that we could see 3 interest rate hikes in 2017. It's worth reminding people, though, that they have overpredicted such rate hikes repeatedly in the past. What's different now is, of course, a president and Congress that are members of the same party, at least in theory.
Mark Hamrick, the senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 19,994 and change, so a little over 5 points away. Always great to talk to you. Thank you very much for making time to talk with us today.
My great pleasure, Steve. Thanks for having me.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Someday we'll find it. The rainbow connection. The lovers. The dream.
12:53, you're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN, and we dreamers in the Allstate Showcase studio are looking forward to the Dow crossing the 20,000 mark sometime today, about 12 points away. Brad Meltzer is on a phone line, and that's the real reason we were playing that song. Brad, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thank you, my brother. How are you?
I'm well. You know what? I could spend the whole time that we have left here talking about how great it is to talk to you and our friendship, or about all the things you've done. I mean, whether it's the thrillers, the novels you write, and the shows on the History Channel, Marvel Comics, Jack and Bobby, whatever. Brad Meltzer is a guy who has been able to find a skill, and the skill is communicating and writing, and then apply that in so many different ways. And I think that's something we can all learn from when it comes to business. The way he has applied it most recently is this series of children's book called The Ordinary People Change the World series. And the latest one, the one just out, is Jim Henson, the guy behind the Muppets, hence the tune. Tell me about why it is. Well, let's back up a little bit and tell me about the series and why you think it's important when it comes to kids and the future of business, education, and all of that.
Yeah, no, for me, business at base has to serve a need, right? The best businesses we all know are launched out of a real need. And for me, I was tired of my own kids looking at reality TV show stars and big mouth athletes and thinking that that's a hero. And I wanted my kids to have better heroes than that. So because of the thrillers I do, because of the TV show I do on the History Channel, I was like, I got better heroes for them. So for my son, who loves sports, that's his need. We did I Am Jackie Robinson. We did for my daughter, who loves dogs and animals. We did I Am Jane Goodall. I Am Rosa Parks. We've done I Am Amelia Earhart and I Am Abraham Lincoln. But we finally get to do not just one of the great creators for my young creative one, but also one of the best businessmen when it came to building on his own know-how, was Jim Henson. Now we launch I Am Jim Henson.
You know what? You're right about that. He is sort of, as I described you, finding different ways to communicate. He did that as well. We had this great skill with puppeteering and communicating and telling stories, and he did it in so many different ways. But you write these stories for kids in a way that introduces them to not just the creativity and the, hey, all of you can do anything, but to the specifics of what it was like for them and their sort of milestones along their lifetime.
And listen, that is exactly where we always start. And the reason we start there is because that's what kids are going to respond to. If I tell my daughter Amelia Earhart flew across the Atlantic Ocean, she's not impressed. She's like, Dad, everyone flies across the Atlantic today. But if I tell her that Amelia Earhart, when she was a little kid, 7 years old, a true story, that when Amelia Earhart was 7 years old, built a homemade roller coaster in her backyard, my daughter's listening. That sounds fun. So every book starts with not when they're famous, but like any of us who loves good business biographies, but I love reading the parts when they're young. So for Jim Henson, and I think this is, you know, one of the best business lessons that I can give my kids, Jim Henson's dream job is he wants to be in television. And he wants to be, you know, and he goes down to the television station to work in television. They say, we have no jobs. And he's all dejected, all upset. And as he's leaving the station, he looks on the wall and sees there's a sign that says, we're looking for puppeteers. So he goes to the library. He takes out books on puppetry, comes back to the same place, says, I'm a puppeteer. Will you hire me? And I want my kids to know, with whatever job they go after in business and life, that if there's an obstacle in your way, you go around it. And that lesson is right there in I Am Jim Henson, on the page.
Now, I would imagine sales have been pretty good, but I also read that there was a real spike in sales after the election in November. I'm not sure I understand that. Do you have an explanation for that?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So I Am Jim Henson comes out on, it actually comes out on Monday. And what we saw, though, is that the other books in the series, when the election was happening through October and November, something strange was happening with sales. And they were trying to figure it out. And then we looked and said, break it down per hero. The sales started going up. No more advertising, no more promotion, but the sales started taking off. And not just in a little way, but in a crazy way. The entire month of October, as we led up to the election, sales went up 91%. And wow. Then we looked and we saw that the sales, the two biggest jumps, were from I Am Rosa Parks and I Am Martin Luther King Jr., which rocketed up right on the week of the election. And whatever side of the political aisle you're on, whether you're Republican or Democrat, one thing was clearly true, is that we were tired of politicians. We were tired and scared of the other side, whatever side you were on. And parents on both sides were going and saying, you know what? I don't want you to see Donald Trump. I don't want you to see Hillary Clinton. I want to show you what a real leader is.
The latest
book. And they
were
showing their kids these.
I'm sorry, Brad. We got breaking news, so I got to run. But the latest book is I Am Jim Henson. Brad Meltzer, it's easy to find in bookstores. Thanks very much for talking to us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, brother.
All right. It's the Biz Lunch on 720 WGN.